News Services Division of Akashwani presents Northeast Diary.
Good evening. Welcome to this edition of Northeast Diary as we explore the northeastern part of India. It gets intriguing to know about it in each episode. Let me tell you about the excitement in today's episode. Today, we bring a report from the inaugural Nagaland Potato Festival held at Jakhama Village, Kohima. We will also get to know about the customs and culture of Mijo Mishumi tribe of Arunachal Pradesh. And in our segment, Enchanting Folktales of Northeast India, we delve into the captivating world of Northeastern folklore, unearthing tales that have been passed down through generations, revealing the magic and wonder of Northeast India's storytelling tradition. So folks, for now, let's go to Arunachal Pradesh, where Export Promotion Council for Handicrafts recently organized a one-day export awareness seminar on the Niryat Bandhu scheme of Directorate General of Foreign Trade in Itanagar. Rakesh Dole, our correspondent in Itanagar, shed light on the invaluable assistance offered by the Niryat Bandhu program in providing essential support and guidance to individuals planning their journey in global business.
The awareness seminar on the Niryat Bandhu scheme, which was attended by entrepreneurs from across Arunachal Pradesh, aimed at enhancing the awareness and understanding among potential exporters and e-commerce exporters regarding various facets of exports. Through interactive sessions, presentations, training and discussions, participants gained insights into export procedures, policies and opportunities, thus empowering them to navigate the global trade landscapes more effectively. Vishnukant, Deputy Director General of Foreign Trade, said that the awareness camp was held for the potential exporter of the state and sensitized them all the procedures of exports. He said that through this initiative, DGFT identified the potential products in the districts and handhold the entrepreneurs in the process of exporting the items by providing a suitable platform.
The basic objective is that this is a handholding initiative to create awareness in the grassroots. जो भी potential exporters हैं, उनको जो भी procedures हैं exports के, उसके बारे में बताते हैं हम लोग जहाँ पे potential products हैं districts में, उनको हम लोग identify करते हैं और वैसे potential exporters को handhold करके यहाँ पे जितने भी सक्सेसफुल एक्सपोर्टर्स हैं उनको बुलाते हैं, एक्सपोर्ट प्रमोशन काउंसिल्स को बुलाते हैं, एक प्लेटफॉर्म देते हैं, डिस्ट्रिक्ट के ऑफिसर्स भी आते हैं और वो सब मिलके जो भी एक्सपोर्टर्स हैं उनकी परेशानियों का निदान करते हैं, साथ साथ हैंड होल्डिंग, क्योंकि उनको जो भी परेशानियां हैं वो ऐसे प्लेटफॉर्म पे आके वो अपने जो भी कन्फ्यूजन है, जो भी इश्यूज हैं वो रिजॉल्व कर सकते हैं।
मिस जस्मीना जिलियांग, who is also an eminent exporter of handicraft and handloom from Northeast region, say that Arunachal Pradesh has huge natural resources, handicraft skills and other natural fibers. She say that even after having such huge potential, there is not a single exporter from the state in this field. On behalf of the Export Promotion Council for Handicraft, she say that it will ensure that the first exporter from the state comes out very soon.
I hate to say this, but although Arunachal Pradesh has a lot of resources, be it skills, be it crafts, be it the other natural fibers, we still haven't seen a single exporter who has emerged from your state. So today, I give my guarantee on behalf of the Export Promotion Council that we will ensure that the first exporter from the state comes out.
You said not a single exporter has emerged from this state or Arunachal Pradesh. So what can be the reason behind this?
I think there are multiple reasons for that. One, I think lack of capacity. Two, it could be design and upgradation of the skills. These three factors, I think, have not been too kind to the entrepreneurs who are here. But I feel that if these gaps are addressed, Arunachal Pradesh can surely see a boom in exports, particularly in the textiles and craft sector.
The overall goal of the Directorate General of Foreign Trade, Niryat Bandhu Scheme, is to use international commerce and e-commerce export as a catalyst for economic development and to support exporters to accelerate India's exports growth trajectory by making it easier for new exporters to enter the market and equip them with the information and abilities they need to compete on the international stage. The program aimed at increasing India's export competitiveness. For Doris Diary, this is Rakesh Dore, Akashwani News, Itanagar.
Breaking ground in agricultural celebration, the inaugural Nagaland Potato Festival unfolded in the quaint village of Jakhma, nestled within the picturesque Kohima district on May 10th. The festival emerged as a platform dedicated to championing the cause of organic potato cultivation, fostering its growth and bestowing well-deserved acknowledgement within the state. Our correspondent Asuno from Kohima presents a glimpse into the festival's vibrant highlights in this exclusive report.
In the first of its kind for the state of Nagaland, Potato Festival was held at Jakhma Village, the southern Angami region in Kohima district. Organized by a group of like-minded people, the Potato Festival is a platform not only for the local farmers within the Jakhma Village and southern Angami region, but also farmers of the other districts of Nagaland. This festival coincides with the potato harvest time, where there are two times to harvest potato. In the paddy field, it is cultivated in January and in the mountains around April to September. Organizers of the first potato festival, Teputo Richard, said,
The first potato festival of Nagaland, so it's a combined effort of individuals, like-minded individuals, who are like interested in promoting the organic farming. Because when you talk about organic potato, it is southern Angami village. So we have many of our farmers doing potato cultivation, but when the time of harvest, it does not reach the market. It finishes in the field itself. People come and buy the potatoes from the field itself. First and foremost is to promote the farmers. So when we promote the farmers, we promote their products. Indirectly, it goes like that. And when we promote the products, we promote the market. And when we promote the market, we are promoting the economy. When we promote the economy as a whole, all villages will promote it.
The organizers aim to enhance farmers' income by promoting the establishment of agri-based enterprises and to facilitate development of value-added products through capacity building and technical support. They also aim to provide sustainable market linkages and improve farmer access to both domestic and international markets. Besides enhancing farmers' entrepreneurial skills, business management and marketing techniques, around 70-plus stalls were set up by vendors displaying and selling varieties of potatoes besides demonstrating potato plantation. For Northeast Diary, this is Asunyo from Akashwani News, Kohima.
Enchanting Folktales of Northeast India. Today, we invite you to immerse yourself in a captivating Thai Kamthi folktale titled Nang Pham and Three Suitors, narrated by senior broadcaster Kaushik Roy.
Nang Pham was a shrewd and opportunistic girl who lived in a ramshackle house all by herself. There were three other young men from a nearby village who tried to woo her. Nang Pham encouraged all three of them and used her wiles to get the young men to run errands for her. Tam Leng visited her in the mornings and would fetch the water from the river and tend to her vegetable garden. Hokam would appear in the afternoons and chop the firewood for her. Kang Khun would come at night and keep watch while she slept. Nang Pham spoke sweetly to all three of them and sent them on their way before it was time for the other to arrive. This comfortable arrangement continued for a while. one day, she noticed that her veranda was on the verge of collapse and in urgent need of repairs. When she asked her three suitors to get the bamboo required for the job, they were more than eager to oblige. While you are in the jungle cutting the bamboo, I shall cook you a delicious meal of chicken and rice. Start at daybreak, and when you have cut 10 poles, you can come and collect your lunch, she told Tam Leng. To Ho Kam, she said, start at daybreak, and when you have cut 15 poles, you can come and collect your lunch. Kang Kun was instructed to collect his lunch after he had cut 20 poles. In this way, none of them would know anything about the other. The next morning, Nang Pham began preparing lunch for the three men. She cooked chicken in bamboo shoot gravy and divided it neatly into three portions, which she then wrapped in leaves. Wrapping a bowl of rice for each one of her suitors, she sat down and waited for the young men to collect their meal. Tam Leng, Ho Kam and Kang Kun started off at daybreak and met at the forest. Quite by chance, they had all decided to cut bamboo from the same grove. They exchanged polite conversation and went about their work. Tam Leng left the grove after he had cut 10 poles, collected his lunch and resumed his work. Ho Kam went for his lunch after cutting 15 poles and Kang Kun went only after he had cut 20 poles. Since they all came at different times, none of them met at the Nang Farm residence. It was high noon when the three of them decided to sit down and share their meal. Tam Leng opened his leaf, and the aroma of the bamboo shoot assailed his nostrils. My girlfriend has given me a chicken leg in bamboo shoot gravy, he declared proudly. No one can cook as well as her. Mine too has given me a dish similar to yours, Ho Kam said. Chicken leg in bamboo shoot gravy. How strange, mine too is chicken in bamboo shoot gravy, but minus the leg portion, exclaimed Kang Kun. Let us see if this leg belongs to your chicken, Tam Leng said jokingly, picking up his piece of chicken leg and placing it next to Kang Kun's piece. Ho Kam did the same thing with his piece. All the three pieces fit perfectly. It really was one bird divided into three portions. They looked incredulously at chicken and then at each other. What is your girlfriend's name? Tam Leng asked the other two. Nang Pham, they replied. They also discovered that they were all cutting bamboo for the same girl without knowing it. Slowly it dawned on them that Nang Pham had only been using them for own selfish reasons. Realizing that they had been made fools of, the three men decided to confront Nang Pham. Let's teach her a lesson, Ho Kam said. And they all went to Nang Pham's house and forcibly took her with them. They decided to sell her off at the slave market in the city and took turns carrying her on their backs. Nang Pham was no lightweight, and before long the young men were exhausted from carrying the heavy burden. They sat down under the shade of a tree near a paddy field to regain their strength, but the warm sun and cool breeze soon put the three tired men to sleep. The owner of the paddy field happened to be inspecting his crop. Seeing the three sleeping men and the girl, the man went forward and asked the girl what were they doing there. I'm on my way to the city to sell these slaves, she said, pointing to the sleeping men. Well, I do need some workers, so you can sell them to me, the man said. They settled at a price, and after the money exchanged hands, Nang Pham made a quick getaway. The owner of the field picked up a stick and prodded the three sleeping men with it. Time to get up and work. I didn't pay to watch you sleep all day. Tam Leng, Ho Kam and Kang Kun woke up with a start. Rubbing the sleep over their eyes, they looked around and saw that Nang Pham was nowhere in sight. Instead, there was this fat man poking them with a stick and telling them to go to work. They drew their swords and chased the startled man away. She has tricked us again. This time, we won't spare her. We must finish her off for good, they said. Meanwhile, Nang Pham had reached home and was plotting to get rid of all three men. Knowing they would come back for her sooner or later, she prepared food and drinks mixed with a poisonous herb and waited. When they barged in through a door, she very sweetly exclaimed, I was expecting you all to come, so I have prepared some food and drinks. Come, let us eat first and then discuss what we have to do. Having walked all the way in the hot sun, the three men were tired, hungry, and thirsty. The aroma of the food was too tempting to resist, and the three men ate and drank to their heart's content. The poison took effect, and soon they were all dead. Nang Pham lost no time in planning her next move. She hid two of the dead men inside and dragged Tham Leng's body out on the veranda. Sitting next to his body, she waited for someone to pass by. Sure enough, Konmuk, a foolish man, was walking along the road. Nang Pham let out a loud wail and soon had Konmuk running towards her house. "Why are you crying, sister?" she asked in a concerned manner. "I've lost my husband and I cannot even carry him to his grave," she sobbed. Konmuk thought it was an opportunity for him to earn some quick money. "I will bury him for you if you will pay me for it," Konmuk said. "I will pay you whatever you ask," Nang Pham replied. Konmuk carried Tham Leng's body and buried him a little way off near the forest. In the meantime, Nang Pham brought out Hokam's body and went down to dirty her feet in the wet mud. She walked up to the steps with muddy feet, leaving her footprints all over the steps and the veranda. When Konmuk came back to collect his payment, she pointed to the muddy footprints near the body and said, "You must have buried him in a shallow grave. That's why he has walked back home." Konmuk looked at the muddy footprints and believed her. "What should we do now?" Konmuk asked her. "I think you should take him and throw him into the river," Nang Pham suggested. "The current will carry him downstream and he won't be able to walk back." Konmuk picked up the body and made his way down towards the river. As soon as Konmuk left with Hokam's body, she quickly brought out Kang Kun's body and splashed it with a pot full of water. When Konmuk returned after throwing the body into the river, he was amazed to see that there was a body lying on the veranda drenched in water. "He has come back from the water," she wailed. "This time, please burn him so that he is gone for good." Konmuk carried the body to the cremation ground and burned it. This time he made sure that the job was thorough. Totally exhausted from ferrying the bodies to their graves, Konmuk wiped his brow and started walking towards Nang Pham's house to collect his payment. A farmer had just finished setting his fields on fire and was returning home covered with soot. Konmuk saw the farmer and ran towards him shouting, "It is you again. I buried you and you came back. I threw you into the water and you managed to come back. Now you have come back after I had just burned you?" He tried to catch hold of the farmer, but the farmer thought him mad and pushed him away. Konmuk would have none of it. He wasn't about to let go of this man who kept coming back from the grave. After all, he had to collect his money for the three times that he had gone about disposing of the body. The two of them grappled with each other and soon a curious crowd gathered around to watch them. "Why are the two of you fighting?" someone from the crowd asked after they were forcibly separated. "He is not a man but a ghost. He keeps coming back from the grave," Konmuk pointed his finger at the farmer. "He is a madman, I tell you," the farmer shouted back. There were a few people who knew the farmer and they demanded an explanation from Konmuk. Konmuk related the events of the day and led them all to Nang Pham's house. Nang Pham pretended she did not even know Konmuk. "I have never seen him before," she lied. Konmuk then led them to Tham Leng's grave. Nang Pham tried to escape but was caught and brought before the village council. After she was pronounced guilty of murder, the angry villagers put her in a bamboo basket and threw her into the fast-flowing river.
Northeast Diary program, broadcast every Thursday at 5:30 p.m., brings very interesting and enchanting stories from the 8 Indian states of Northeast India. Don't forget to tune in. Now let's know about custom and culture of Mijumishi tribe from our presenter, Sokep Kree.
The Mismis belong to Tibeto-Mongoloid stock. The presence of Mismis in the foothills of Lohit Valley got a mention for the first time in the chronicles of Ahoms during the reign of Ahom King Sutyenfa Narya Raja in the year 1644 to 1648 AD. There had been instances of little skirmishes between the Mismis and the Ahom Kingdom. The might of Ahom Kingdom from this region was finished by the imperialist Britishers. However, the Britishers came into contact with the Mizu and Digaru Mismis in the year 1825 when adventurers like Lieutenant Wilcox and Dr. Griffith went deep into the Mismi Hills. Due to non-exposure to the outside world, the Mismis were suspicious of the visiting strangers to their land. The Mismis, like other hill tribes of the region, were very averse to receive strangers. It was very unfortunate that a fakir named Paramananda Acharya in 1848 and M. Crick, a French missionary in 1851, were got killed when they were crossing Mismi areas. The person who killed Mr. M. Crick was no other than Kaisha, a resident of small village under present Hawaii Circle of Anzao District, Arunachal Pradesh. The population of Mizu Mismi is spread over the two districts, that is Lohit and Anzao districts of Arunachal Pradesh. Out of seven administrative circles of Anzao district, that is Hualien, Chaglagam, Goilien, Manchal, Hawaii, Walong and Kibito, the Mizu Mismis are the predominant tribe in Anzao district, except in Chaglagam, Hualien and Goilien circle, where the presence of Digaru Mismis are also found. As a matter of fact, there is no difference between Mizu and Digaru Mismis except for a little differences in spoken dialect. In Lohit district, the presence of Mizu Mismi can be seen in majority in villages under Wakro circle. Loyaliang, Danglat and Changlang villages under Teju circle and few villages under Sunpura circle. And now let me tell you about from where Mizu Mismis were known to have migrated. Mizu Mismis, also called Kaman, are believed to have come from Kachin Hills of Burma in phase manner. As earlier already mentioned that the presence of Mizu Mismis was recorded, which dates back to 1644 to 1648 AD, it can be presumed that the tribe must have come to this place prior to 1644 AD. And now let us come to socio-economic, cultural and social life of the Mizu Mismis. The Mizu Mismis are the agriculturist tribe. They practice jhum or shifting cultivation as the topography does not allow for doing settled cultivation. They are self-sufficient tribe. They grow maize, millet and rice as a primary crop and grow kachu, sweet potato and other horticultural crops and vegetables to supplement the primary crops. The Mizu Mismis are also considered to be a most enterprising tribe. Their trade koptis, also called Mismi Tita, Kasturi, the inner organ of the reindeer, and also trade opium, this locally called Kani, though it is illegal. People nowadays are making money from horticultural crops. Oranges and cardamom has become a main commercial crop. In spite of lack of marketing facilities, farmers are making money by transporting it to the nearest town. The Miju Mismis are having distinct culture of their own. The cultural practices being followed by this tribe since time immemorial are being preserved undisturbed even to these days. The ingredients of cultural like dialects, dresses and costumes, songs and dances, religious faiths, etc. are different from other tribes of the state. As already told earlier that the Miju and Digaru Mismis are following same customs and tradition, the difference we find between these tribes are in dialect only. So far as the social life of the Miju and also as Digaru Mismis are concerned, the family is governed by patriarchal system, where the eldest male member is the head of the family. So, the decision of his is supreme in the family and his command prevails. In terms of making and arranging matrimonials, the cross-cousin marriage, that is, marriage between brother's daughter and sister's son, are preferred most. Mithun is given as a bride price. Now, let us come to the faith and religion of the Miju Mismis. Both Miju and Digaru Mismis follow their indigenous faith. This tribe primarily worship the goddess called Matai, the creator of universe. It is similar to the Donipolo faith followed by the Abotani race of Arunachal Pradesh, because Mismis also worship sun god. Nature like mountains, forests and rivers are also worshipped by offering domestic animals in the form of sacrifices. Miju and Digaru Mismis celebrate Tamiladu festival on 15th February every year. This festival is observed to appease Goddess Matai. Goddess Matai is prayed to bless people with bumper harvest of crops on this festival. Now let us come to the food habits of the Miju and Digaru Mismis. The basic diet generally consists of the cereals, millets, vegetables and meat. Millet, maize and rice are commonly taken and they are supplemented by sweet potato, arum or kachu. A large varieties of wild leafy vegetables, roots and fruits including bamboo shoots are consumed. The Mismis are, so to say, champion in using nature for survival. And now let us come to the changing scenario of the Mijus and Digaru Mismis. With the changing trend and social dynamics in every field, the Mismis are also following the trend of change. Now, it is seen that every household realizes the importance of education. With the educational institution spreaded far and wide, the parents have no choice but to send their children to the nearest schools. Changes in is being seen in the field of dresses also. The local costumes are being improved by adding new designs. Songs and dances are also composed and choreographed according to present trend. In short, it can be concluded that the Mijus and Digaru Mismis are catching the pace of modernization.
This program was presented and produced by Vinita Thakur with assistance from Kumar Gaurav. It was brought to you by the News Services Division of Akashwani.